welcome back to the Research VR podcast, everyone, the podcast behind the science and design of virtual reality. I am your host, Osbal Abanian, and with me today is special guest Zach Kinstner, the founder and CEO of Aesthetic Interactive. And he's the person that has been working on EXA Infinite Instrument, which is an awesome VR music tool. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Oz. How are you doing?
Pretty good. And with us today is our co-host, beaming in from Germany, Peter Leckoff.
Yes, hello. Today I'm even joining from a Vive Pro, so I'm seeing everything sharper than usual.
Nice. So this has been a conversation that I've been trying to have, again, on the realm of like VR design and things that I've been really into for quite some time. Zach's work has been probably one of the most like, one of the earliest forms of VR design that I had been inspired by. And so I'm really excited to have this conversation, and I think there's a lot that we can dive into here. So Zach, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how you ended up into VR.
Sure. Well, I've been working as a contractor consultant for about the last 11 or 12 years. Just started working with that right out of college. I've always been good at bringing the arts and creativity and design side into development, taking someone's designer's mock-up and making it real and making it feel good. So I worked with all kinds of different technologies along the way. In about, I think, late 2014, I started working with Leap Motion Hands, 3D inputs, and shortly after that, VR. And I really felt like that was a good space for me to be in. It clicked with me.
Right. You were using the Leap Motion before you had it on a VR headset.
Yeah. So I had Leap Motion reached out to me and asked if I would make one of my iPhone games into Leap Motion controlled games. So it was like a 3D Tetris style game called Fragmental 3D. And so that actually, I learned a lot about that project, about what does and doesn't work with hands and 3D inputs. And what people understand, what they don't, what's easy to learn, what's not. So that kind of kicked off my whole theory of how design should work and how interaction should work in VR.
And how was it to develop for the Leap Motion back then, when still the SDK wasn't that developed and overall the whole community didn't form yet?
It was good. Early on, it took a lot of processing power, so the game couldn't really do a whole lot. This was well before Orion, so they were still working out kinks and getting the gestures to work. And I did a lot of telling people, like, look into a blank area, don't look towards your screens or turn the lights off, all these different, or take your ring off or your watch off, all these things to kind of help make the hands work better. And they've improved so much since then. So we went through all kinds of trial and error on the 3D Tetris Fragmental app, but ended up just reaching out, grabbing the pieces, pulling them around, and kind of throwing them down. And if you didn't throw them down in time, they would fall down.
Maybe another question: why did you actually took this opportunity? Because I imagine back then the user base was pretty small for Leap Motion, and to be honest, even though we had them multiple times on the podcast and the technology is great, it's still not everyday device for a lot of people. So was it just an R&D project, or did you actually hope for this port of your game to actually bring an income?
That's always a hope that it'll bring an income, but I knew that it was very early on. It really seemed like something that I was interested in and learning about and creating. And I'd worked with 3D and 3D games in the past. So this was sort of a natural step into 3D input, like getting in there. And like we said, this was just a little bit before VR. So this was still Leap Motion sits on your desk and points upward and your hands kind of float, which made it more difficult for playing, because then you've got to map your hand space to the flat 2D space of your screen. Makes it more difficult. But it was an area that I wanted to learn about and pursue. And that's been a recurring thing in all of my entire career. Like I don't stay with just one technology. You start with Flash, learn HTML5, learn backend, learn database, learn, you know, graph database, all these things. So it's sort of a next step in that progression.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't realize you were also an iOS developer before, and you had been making iOS games. And yeah, we just pulled up the video here, looking at what Fragmental 3D looked like.
Oh yeah, old video.
The way the game works, it seems like you're dragging around on the screen to rotate the camera around a rectangular. Is that a prism? No, it's not. That's not a triangle. Just a rectangle. Just a
3D
rectangle.
Grid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 3D grid.
Right. A 3D grid.
It's a bunch of different environments. Have, yeah.
And the 3D blocks are, or the Tetris blocks are coming down, and you're essentially kind of choosing where in this 3D rectangle they're going to be coming down. It's a pretty game.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. You move them. You rotate them, and. This was, what's the date say? 2008, maybe? I can't see it from here.
That was, yes, that's in 2011, at least the video was.
Oh, the video? So that sounds, maybe 2010 was when it came out.
So the game seemed to work pretty nice on iPhone, and you ported it to Leap Motion. Would you say that today you could port the game
this
maybe
is,
also
this
to
is the Leap Motion version.
Oh, this is a Leap Motion version, and could something similar work on Oculus Go, where you don't have that much degrees of freedom? Or would you say that it necessarily requires this ability to grasp and feel for this game to be fun?
That's an important question. Is the game fun? And for a lot of people, no, it's not. It takes a lot of mental spatial thinking to get it right. I did make a VR demo of this. I'm not sure if it's online right now, but it didn't actually use any positional tracking. You would grab in the air and drag yourself around, just pivot around the center. So I think it would work on a device that doesn't have 6 degrees of freedom, plus like Leap Motion hands attached to the front of it.
Wouldn't you need? I mean, even though the camera, the position where you're looking at this from isn't positionally tracked, but your hand is, right? And because you have to grab something and push it forward or pull it back, would that work with a Go with a 3DOF controller? Maybe you can use the stick on the, or the thumb pad to kind of like push forward, but.
I think it would work.
But it wouldn't be that much fun.
Yeah, it might not be that much fun. It's pretty tricky for people to learn how to do the turning of the pieces, in part because it has to snap into a grid. So you can see, like, as it turns, it crosses a threshold, and then it kind of quickly snaps into its next position. It's got a little wobble to it, which I thought felt pretty satisfying. But if you're struggling to get the rotations right, then it's just frustrating.
Right. Well, let's move on from these videos, because it's going to be harder for listeners to kind of reference it. And we will have these videos for people to listen to watch in the description. So in case you're listening to this, and you want to see what the videos look like, we have the trailers and the videos in the description. Peter?
So I guess you didn't stop with the Leap Motion experiments, right? You continued further. So how did your journey went on through this whole world of exciting new technologies?
So I actually, that's a good stepping stone, because I took what I learned from this Fragmental 3D project and just the frustrations of trying to teach people to do certain gestures or move this speed or rotate this way. And I tried to go hard the other direction. And that's when I started working on what was then called Hovercast, and now it's called Hover UI Kit. And that simplified everything down to, you put a cursor on your fingertip, and to make a selection for a button, you just get close to the button, it fills up with color. Once it's full, you hold it there for half a second or 200 milliseconds, whatever you set, and it selects it. So there you have really no learning curve. If you get anywhere close to the button, it starts filling up with color. That sort of is a visual indicator to you that this is interactive and it's filling up as I get close. So, the whole system is just based around this one simple interaction. Even for sliders, checkboxes, radio buttons, all that stuff, you just take your cursor, which might be a fingertip or a thumb or your palm, or like the tip of your Vive controller. You just get close to the button and hover there for a second. It makes a selection for you.
Right. And this is in the time where almost all the UIs were basically raycasted laser pointers that you're pointing at 2D, you know, interfaces in VR. And I'm guessing the one frustration that was a frustration that you were trying to, you know, solve is how do you make the UI more interactive or more native to the space?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that and trying to come up with something that worked well with the Leap hands, where you don't necessarily have an easy or reliable, like discrete on or off or button pressed, button not pressed type of an interaction. It could be pretty annoying to have to like pinch onto a button or grab onto a button. And those are kind of the main discrete on and off states you get with the hand. People were working on, I don't know, maybe at this time when I was doing this, but a lot of like push in, push out physics based buttons. And for me, those work, but they sort of have the risk of, you know, bumping them accidentally. Or if you've got a lot of them in the space, it's difficult to single out just one sometimes. So I was just trying to simplify it down to this core hover interaction and try to build some different styles of interfaces. So like we're looking at the hover UI page. This was a hover cast where you have an arc that extends beyond your fingertips when your palm is facing you. So you kind of flip your palm up sort of like a cell phone, like you might with an iPhone. You flip your palm towards you. That's when the menu appears, and this arc shaped menu as a hierarchy. You can dive in and come back out of that hierarchy to access things. That's where it started.
To visually describe it, it almost looks like they're extensions of your fingers that come out from the palm of your hands. And
yeah, exactly.
And kind of like that's, you're touching like almost another knuckle or another section of finger that's on your fingertips.
And it looks very, very useful and also very intuitional. And I would actually ask you the following question. When I look at what the HoloLens brings in terms of UI and other, basically, you know, augmented reality devices and even a lot of VR experiences, they still are not in this level. And I look at what we right now see on the screen, on the menu you build, and I'm like thinking, okay, apparently there is a kit. Why no one is using it? Why no one is actually creating something that is so intuitive and so useful, but we still rely on this weird clicking on a HoloLens or in some VR games on this point with a laser pointer and select? Why is there not a bigger adoption for, you know, similar menu concepts? Or
I think I'm just bad at marketing. I spend all my time working on stuff. This has been around since I want to say like late 2014, early 2015 was the first hovercast instance, and since then it's grown into this whole kit where there's panels you can use that are like you can attach them to the wall or something or have them follow your palm, but. There's a keyboard there, and so it's expanded to a bunch of different things, and like we'll probably talk about later with Exa, I've got a hierarchy style menu that fans out and it expands into space instead of the hover cast style where it kind of regenerates in the same space. So I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do with it.
I mean, I'll also say this, you know, the Leap, back when you were making this, I think Leap Motion was a lot more, saturated in the VR market, where like it was very, very, it was very common for people to have a Leap Motion headset on their DK2s. And then like, I mean, that's how I also got to try these out. And since then, you know, since the touch controllers and the Vive controllers have become the default, it's, you know, we've just seen less projects using Leap Motion. But there is something to like why aren't augmented reality companies at least using these concepts or learning from them? And I think you can probably, you know, account that to just like, oh, they want to just reinvent the whole wheel by themselves, or perhaps they don't even know that this exists. But the first time I actually heard about this was through a video that that had been inspired by your work. It was Mike Alger. Was, I think, his master's thesis video. He would kind of like made this whole VR design manifesto video. It's awesome. I think it's one of the, if anyone is interested in VR design, they need to watch that to kind of understand the basics of what was being thought of at the time. And I think we've made some developments since then as well. But he references you heavily throughout that video in terms of how buttons should feel and interact. And Let's talk a little bit. Actually, I love the interaction of perhaps going into, you know, deeper into the menu. The way to go back is actually you just closing your left palm, and it sucks. It almost like sucks you back a level of menu. I thought that was really neat.
Yeah. There's a, and you can also, if you want to, you can just click that button and that's in your palm with your other hand. So that doesn't always work great because when you have your hands overlapping, leap motion can, I mean, well, anything is going to struggle to figure out what's going on when your hands are overlapping. But yeah, so you can push that button or just close your hands into or left hand into a fist to navigate back.
The metaphor works. You're squeezing that button that's in your palm by closing your fist, and the button is getting pushed essentially.
Yep. And like you said earlier, that was something that was important to me, was to make it feel like an extension of your hand, of your body. I like that idea of using VR to be creative, but at this like as a part of that, feeling like you have some kind of superpowers. You know, you've got these things that you don't have in real life, and you can navigate this menu, and it's a part of you, and you control it and make things happen.
What did you? Did you find yourself like trying to pull metaphors from the real world at all, or perhaps even other inspirations from movies? Like, I know movies are notorious for having like crazy UI that really makes no sense but just looks cool.
Right.
Yeah. How did you come up with these concepts? Was it purely iterative and based off of things that you thought would work well, and you kind of expanded on those ideas?
So I'm sure with the early Hovercast designs that there has to be precedence for people using kind of hand-based menus. Nothing comes immediately to mind. But I think with the early work on the Fragmental 3D and then going into this, I sort of early on developed that idea that what you see in movies isn't what works in VR. Like, you can't just Minority Report wave your hand around. Like, how do you know if you're pushing forward or backward, or like there's no trigger to start the motion, or you don't know how fast or slow you're going, or if you need to move in an arc or straight line. Like, these things are all possible from a developer side. It's just really hard to teach a user how to do them and do them accurately and have the device reliably track exactly what they're doing. So that's a sort of an extra layer of frustration, is even if you are doing this gesture just right, if the device doesn't track you correctly, then you're going to get your failure rate is going to start to build up.
Absolutely.
So I kind of learned early on that I wanted to stick with the most reliable things that I could find, reliable and like you see here with all the visual indicators happening. Like, I want it to be discoverable so that there's not a huge learning curve. You pretty instantly, as soon as you put your hand anywhere close to this menu, things start filling up with color. You know, it's interactive. You kind of follow the cues that it gives you.
So maybe an counterexample would be the movie Johnny Mnemonic, where Keanu Reeves is putting on this weird virtual reality headset. Maybe you can open the video quickly. Just Google on YouTube Johnny Mnemonic VR. And the idea is that the guy, it's awesome. It's one of the first cyberpunk movies. And the guy is literally putting on the VR headset, those gloves, and he's literally grabbing things in VR. And while he's grabbing him, he's getting electrical shocks and shaking it, feeling it. When you watch it, you can imagine he's like grabbing this thing and unfolding it, and everything opens and flashes. And this is like always the crazy idea that I had about VR before I tried it before. So as a young student, I was like super inspired by it. But obviously, you know, VR seems to work more in the directions that you have programmed. But yeah, I hope we'll see it.
Oh, okay. I've seen the clips and screenshots of this, but I've never ever seen the movie. Okay.
Yeah, I hope there will be a
we'll
second
link this
in the
trailer as well.
Yeah, it's an awesome movie to show how we imagined the VR world and the virtual world back then, and how it's definitely not going to happen. Yeah, here. He puts on the headset, and you will see now the moment. Yes, he's grabbing with his hands. He's shooting with his fingers, and he has his hands on. He's grabbing the VR world, unfolding it. It's just crazy. Not going to happen that way.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah, it looks like early Vive.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
The big headset he put on looked like an early Vive. Another one looked like an early Rift. It's funny because this is like pre-Matrix Keanu Reeves, and there was a shot of him like getting hooked up something to his brain.
Mm-hmm. Copying memories to his hard drive. It's a good movie. It's a good inspiration, How to Not Do VR. So apparently you choose the other path that is more intuitive. And where did you get inspiration then?
Inspirations. I just kept working at it, and figuring out what felt good to me and what, you know, put family members or friends in there and see what makes sense to them. And especially with my work on EXA in the past year and a half or so, just really encouraging and constantly asking for user feedback. What music making flows are you trying to achieve and what's working and what's not? And when the user proposes a new feature or a new interaction or a new menu or something, then it becomes my goal to say, that's a good idea. I like that. But what is it that you're actually trying to solve? I need to know what problem it is that you're having, so that I know, is this solution the right way? This solution might have some kind of conflict that I can see. What are you trying to solve? Maybe there's, two or three other ways we can make this better. So working backward from that.
Can you quickly describe the application for people who haven't seen it or tried it out before?
Sure. So the app is called EXA, the Infinite Instrument. It's on Steam. It's been in early access just because I'm constantly working on it, and making it better. It's a VR app for making music and designing your own instruments and recording musical performances and doing live looping. As you're playing and recording your loops, it also captures your motions while you're playing. So that when you're done, you have a little robot guy who's following exactly what you just played and how you played it. Yep. So you can step away and he's there, and you can stack these loops up and arrange them with a sequencer to make entire songs. And as they play, you can see the virtual band doing exactly what you just did. And, when the piano part comes up, the piano player shows up, the robot, and starts playing. The drums, guitar, whatever, any instrument, any sound that you want to make, you can make in EXA. There are musical shapes that I call ringers. You can attach any sounds you want to them, you can stretch them out, draw them out of thin air, circles or squares or lines, or triangles, put them however you want to build instruments. So you might stack a bunch of squares up and play and strike straight through them, and that becomes like a chord. Or you could put a series of line shaped ringers together and strum them, and that's like a guitar. It's really up to you. It's very much a musical sandbox. You can do what you want and make recordings and create performances that you can watch and come back and edit after you're done, and you can share them with other people. Not directly yet. That's coming, where you'd be able to share your performances with other people. But if you sent them your file, you could load somebody else's up and walk through their performance and say, I'd rather see this acoustic guitar sound like an electric guitar. So you go and click on tap the loop and go through the menu and change the sound or re-quantize it or shift it up or down an octave, all that kind of stuff.
Right. That sounds so empowering.
It's a pretty well-developed, it's quite a well-developed, DAW, like a digital audio workstation, at least one that I've seen in VR. And however, it tries to really break the hard aspects of DAWs, where you really need to have that deep knowledge to approach it. Because and this is a common theme that we keep coming back to with VR, I think the intuitive hand controls end up making doing things easier in VR. And so even playing instruments ends up becoming you just get to bang your hand or bang the instrument, bang the, what do you call this? The drumsticks that come out of your hands. What do you call those?
I just usually call those tools. Yeah. Cause there's tools like mallets. There's tool that's like a violin bow. There's one that's a proximity tool where it gets louder as you get closer to the ringer, to the musical shape. Yeah.
It's all hand-based, and you hit them into the ringers. But the best thing about it is that, like, you know, you have these metaphors of piano, drums, and instruments that we're pretty familiar with in terms of the layout. But if you've ever played a piano, and or if you've played any instrument, that there's this note, there's the reach, right? Like between closer notes, and then there's a longer reach to a higher note. And let's say it's hard to reach that, or you don't remember exactly which note it is. The best thing about Exa is that you can grab that note from the piano and
put
then
it next to, yeah.
pull it, put it next to the other note, and then just like, okay, you know, I just need these three notes. I need to play a chord, and you put those, grab those three notes, put them next to each other, and then you have one, two, three, and you knock. You're not going to hit a note that wasn't in the chord. It's that sort of like. That's the advantage I think that VR gives us, is when you have spatial computing, you have that space to put things next to each other. You can break through the barriers of how real instruments work and make it somewhat easier to do repeated tasks. And I think I love that aspect of it. And I remember showing it to my dad, and he was like, "That is the coolest thing I've ever seen."
So yeah, it's like instead of the instrument dictating how it must be played, you have the opportunity to manipulate the instrument to suit either your playing style, or say you want to make a dance out of it. So you're choreographing how you want to move, or you have chords or all kinds of different things. It's possible. It's up to you to reconfigure the instrument to be shaped in a way that suits you. So you can design it for the song or for your style, any of that.
And it's pretty empowering in a sense when I would imagine it. So I just have this weird memory of this German musician who has like all kind of instruments on his body, and he's like twitching in a way and producing those sounds. Mm-hmm. So you basically easy up that process. But what you mentioned in the beginning, right, you basically program your own music, your music instruments, you play them, and then you see those robots, this band playing it. So, I mean, maybe having someone who's handicapped, who cannot like stand up and have a guitar and play all the strings, well, he reconfigures the guitar himself, and he's suddenly enabled to actually play this music as much as he wants, and then actually sees this band performing. I can imagine it's like a pretty magic moment for someone who, you know, has been struggling with music instruments, or is actually not so skilled and doesn't have time for 3 years to actually, learn the guitar in the right way. He just, you know, moves them around, he likes the sounds, he's playing it, and then suddenly there is a melody, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's actually, I forget the name of the group, but there was a group that was just posted on Twitter about that. They were working with a group of disabled kids, and they were trying out Exa in VR. And like, I think there's a picture of one of the kids in a wheelchair, and I think they had sort of moved the drums around. You can kind of see it in the picture, move the drums around to be in a place that suits him.
That's amazing.
It suits his, suits his mobility.
That. Yeah, that. I mean, that really is the best element of spatial computing, is the fact that it doesn't have to be in it. Like, there's no stands that for things to be on. It's that you can put them in places that you need. And similarly, like people like the Oculus Go to watch videos in it, because they can lie down in their bed. Mm-hmm. And with certain apps, I think with Netflix, you can pull the video up to your ceiling, and so you can just be lying down, looking straight up, and watching a video. You can't do that with your iPad unless you get a stand, right? Or like, there's right. cool things that's is spatial computing a good term? What do you guys think? I don't know.
I think spatial computing in a way describes actually something else, but it's fitting so way better for VR. I guess this buzz term that is recently in the news describes more the idea that whenever you are in a room at every position, you have calculation available to you. So in a way, not the fact that Alexa can hear you, but the fact that you can talk to Alexa and Alexa does a query for you no matter where you are, is in a way this spatial computing, ambient computing, however you call it. It's not a new concept, but with VR, suddenly I think the fact that you are enacted through the world, that your extended mind reaches out to it and interacts with it, and your embodiment drives the calculation power, in a sense, is like ambient computing, because you surround yourself by certain things. It doesn't have to be a musical instrument, right? In a way, it can be also code signs that are being executed. So I could, in a way, become like a machine that has like all type of algorithms. And when there are some requests, I'm pushing this button or this button or this button. So I can, in a way, control the computer through my body movements. And I guess that is spatial computing from the stance of virtual reality, right? Whether it's music or code or queries that I execute. I'm using my body the same way as, I forgot what the project was called, but there was this lady who created this whole bodysuit that she was playing music with. So the way she would move around, and I think there's also this instrument where you actually move your hands around this instrument, and the way you're changing the magnetic field to change the pitch and voice. And this is just a way to sync with your body and actually execute things with your body. And in a way, yeah, I would say it's fitting.
Definitely. One more thing that I actually want to point out that you brought. So clearly Hover UI was a big aspect of EXA. And if you, I don't think, you know, if you hadn't developed Hover UI, EXA would have taken like twice as long to build, because it's like, you build these instruments, how you change the notes, how you change, you know, you can go up and down an whole octaves, how you save, how the entire sequencing works, just literally everything that's not playing the instruments is like built on top of Hover UI. And this is something that we don't see enough people perhaps at this point talking about still, is the problem of, like, you know, how do you name files, or how do you type in VR? You have one of the a solution for that as well. You built a Hover UI keyboard. Walk us a little bit through it, because I think it's pretty, you try to, you know, tackle some of the hard parts of VR. Walk us a little bit through in terms of how did you approach keyboards? What had you tried, and what were some of the problems that you saw with VR keyboards, and how did you try to fix those?
Okay. So let's start big picture. So you had mentioned the use of Hover VR or Hover UI Kit in EXA was vital. And the reason for that is I tend to sort of separate interactions onto a spectrum or a continuum from the most physical, like hands-on style, all the way to the other side, where it's this abstract sort of acting at a distance style interactions. And I try to use both ends of that continuum with EXA. I try to save, for EXA and for anything else, I try to save the physical interactions for the main content. The physical interactions should be the ones that are fun and engaging and sort of the reason why you're in the app. So with EXA, the physical interactions are hitting the ringers, grabbing them, dragging them around, scaling them up, swapping the tools. Those are things that you can do quickly, and there's sort of the point of the app is that you can do these things in space. Like, and for the menus, you don't need depth to run a menu. And for me, I kind of think that most of the time, the flat panel works better for those types of things than trying to hunt around in depth or having a drawer full of things that you've got to kind of push around or whatever to reach and grab them. I try to make that distinction
enough in real life. When you're trying to take through some shit, you know, like,
I don't want a VR junk drawer. Yeah.
No, but.
Right. So that's sort of the idea there, is that if it's something that's fun and engaging, it's the main content, then you want to use physical interactions, hands-on, reach in there, touch it, move around it, that kind of thing. For the menus pop up when you need them. If you say you select a loop or you select a bunch of ringers, which is another interesting point, with the menus, it allows you to do multi interactions. So I can like grab in the air in EXA and swipe across the whole piano, and that selects all whatever 25 keys that are there. And the one menu pops up, and now I can go and change the sound for all of those things, or go in and set an interval so that they all play in a major scale or a minor scale. And that's only a few clicks away. There's nothing to like hunt around for in the space to go find and then grab it and drag it and set it on top of the keyboard and like manipulate this tool to make these changes. It's just, it pops up in your face when you ask for it, you make a selection, you hit deselect and it goes away and you keep going. It may be a little less fun in some cases to do it that way, but it's far more efficient. And if you're just trying to, like, say you're trying to just change a sound on a piano, or a guitar shaped instrument, but you don't know exactly what you want, you could go and grab a dozen different tapes for different samples or something, you know, some kind of metaphor like a cassette tape or something, and grab it and touch all the things you want to change and then try it, and then go and grab another tape and set it on there and try it. That might be fun the first couple times, or it might be fun if you know exactly what you want. But if you're trying to like scan through a dozen different piano sounds or I don't know, 100 different snare drum sounds, like you can get these giant sample packs that have all these sounds. That's a lot of motion, very inefficient to make that happen. And by the time you just don't want to do it anymore. So with the menu, you just tap the button, or you can just hover on it, and it'll, the way these menus are set up, you just hover on the button and it makes the sound for you. So you just listen to each one, step, make a selection and move on.
There is this fascinating different approaches, actually two of them, regards keyboards and regards any the interactions you just described. So I was on a talk about virtual keyboards on IEEE, and the person there, I will link some in the show notes, actually talked for 1.5 hours how they try different keyboards, how they try to move them down, up, basically projecting the hands, not projecting the hands, selecting auto correction. And what I see here on the GIF we are currently looking on, or GIF, is a very functional keyboard that GIF, GIF, that I guess you did not necessarily, I don't want
I'm,
to open
I'm
that.
A GIF too.
Yeah. But I guess you didn't read many studies on researchers, and you didn't read much of, you know, the research, but you just basically followed the flow and you...
yeah, Jeff, I just build, man.
Jesus.
It just looks so intuitive, and I'm just wondering why is it, you know, for some developers like you so not easy but doable to create such intuitive looking keyboards, and there are other researchers who just basically research it for years. So why is there such a, you know, dual approach to VR?
Ooh, I don't know the answer to that. So I mean, this, I don't think this keyboard is the most efficient that you'll get in VR by far. I think you could probably get some very effective ones, fast ones, if you sort of force the user to train a little bit, you know, like if you've got to wiggle your fingers just the right way or something. And part of that is just getting the tracking fidelity that you need to move quickly. Same thing with like trying to play piano with your fingers all spread out and hitting different keys. You just can't do that right now in VR. So for this keyboard, I mean, you've got the proximity color that fills up, that mm-hmm. kind of gives you your spatial, like where you are in space to help guide you. It highlights with that white square which one is the closest to your finger, so you know which one, if you push down, that's the one that you get. Mm-hmm. The way that the timer works, I think right here you probably have maybe a quarter of a second. For the timer, that sort of the lighter gray flash that comes up, that gives you a chance to pull away if you're making a mistake. So you see the square, you see it start with fill with color. If you don't want it, you have a moment to pull away. And in this particular GIF, you can see that the left hand goes right through the keyboard.
Yes, but from
which
both
is another
sides.
A bonus of that, right? Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I didn't
notice
that until today, actually.
So that's a bonus of the hover timer, is that you can, I mean, here it's sort of it's meant to be intentional, like, look, I can play this from the back side, but practically that means that you have some forgiveness when you're moving around. If this keyboard's floating in space and you're kind of like turning to look at something and you start bumping the keys, that's no good. But if your hand just passes through it, it ignores it. It's not long enough in one spot to stay to, you know, trigger that key.
But it brings also another bonus with it. So when you're typing on a real physical keyboard, you're always covering with your hands the keys. But when I imagine I'm looking in this augmented reality or VR keyboard and my hands are behind it, mm-hmm. I can like way easier, you know, touch the buttons because I'm not blocking my visual path with the hands, right? See, I never seen that such an interaction before where you actually touch a menu from behind it.
From behind.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't block the visuals of the keyboard. You can... Like, especially, I think it makes sense for shift and caps, right? You can just hold down the shift from behind. You don't have to twist your wrist around to match the keyboard in the front. I think that's a really fascinating interaction. And That's actually, so the fact that menus are interactable two ways is an element that you use in Excel a lot with your instruments or the ringers for the instruments. With a piano, with a guitar, we all know that you can strum down with a pick and strum up with a pick, and that can give you twice as many notes that you could rather than strumming the same way down. You've never been able to do that with pianos up until, or drums even, up until I think in EXA, where you can literally strum through the piano key and then back up. And that's,
yeah.
I think that whole motion is also why your logo is this like figure eight, is because you can go in this flow of your finger, of your hands, and just like strum down, strum up, strum down, strum up. And it's like mm-hmm. this flow through the keyboard and the notes that you have. It's really something wonderful that, it takes full advantage of the fact that you're in VR, you're using spatial computing, and you can kind of make up your own rules.
How did it feel for you? You're a musician yourself, right? So how was it for you to try it out first time? Did it resemble you of your musical instruments, or did you have to relearn everything?
There's for sure a learning curve, but I think that's not a knock in any sense. I think the strumming aspect of it made a lot of sense to me. Especially like I'm coming from like a cello, like playing cello, you also have the being able to stroke the bow both to be able to play the bow both ways. And yeah, I think being able to even do that on drums, like up, down and going through, like, you know, the same way you would be conducting with your hands and being able to give people rhythm, that was a really cool advantage that I saw that you could have. I haven't spent like, you know, hundreds of hours in EXA, and I've been able to make like short little songs and tidbits of things, but I think like the UI, like the fundamentals of the UI are there's a lot of like, you know, legs to those ideas, and I'm excited to see, you know, where those ideas can go and who gets inspired by these ideas.
Is there maybe a way to connect the virtual world to real world? So let's say I have robots who are sitting around real instruments and they have like very quick hands and can do everything. And I'm in device, I'm just programming my nice music in this app. And at some point, those robots start to actually play it in real life and do those quick movements. And I actually see how a real professional musician would have to do it. Or it's like something totally crazy.
If I'm understanding correctly, so you mean like loading a pro musician's performance and watching it back? Yeah,
yes.
It's not built into the app yet. So that's one thing I want to add is like having Steam Workshop where you can upload your songs or your instrument groupings so that other people can pull them down into their scenes and start playing with them or watch them, manipulate them, learn from them. But for sure, you can watch the robots play to learn how that piece was performed. Like Oz was saying, with the drums or with any of the instruments, you can swoop in and out and down and through these things. So you might watch this pro musician or pro EXA musician, I guess, where they're playing, they downstroke through the bass drum, up through the hi-hat, down through the snare, up through the hi-hat, and then back down through the kick again. And so that forms this kind of two figure eight loop, or just one figure eight loop, where boom, tch, boom, tch, and it's just this one fluid motion. It's not kind of the jerky recoil style drums that we're all used to watching. It's sort of this fluid thing that's happening. And a lot of times that allows you to play faster. Like you can, you can line the instruments up. Like you can, it's going to be kind of hard to describe. It's like a wheel shape where you've got north, south, east, and west, and then maybe northwest, southwest, like all. So eight different ringers that are arranged in that sort of radial pattern. And then you just move your tool in a circular motion through them, and it plays like a arpeggio style. Or you can assign different drums to those notes and play a drum beat just by making circular shape through the wheel.
Are the controllers precise enough? And when we speak about controllers, how difficult was it for you, and still is, to actually take care of all different VR input methods to be equally nice for your experience?
Right. So right now it's mostly the Vive and the Oculus controllers. It works for me, at least, with the Windows MR controllers. Some people have had issues with Windows MR. I've tried to use Leapmotion hands in there, and I haven't spent enough time on that to make it worthwhile to play with the hands. Definitely feels good just to kind of like strum through things, but then you've got to figure out how you're going to do your locomotion and everything with the hands too, and it gets tougher. Maybe we'll talk about the Superman style locomotion in a minute with the Leapmotion hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the controllers are definitely accurate enough, and the EXA is actually doing something where it's predicting maybe 30 or 40 milliseconds in advance where the controller is going to be and if it's going to pass through a ringer, and that gives me enough to, or that gives EXA enough time to take that event, send it off, and get it scheduled before the audio buffer kicks in and reads it. So
amazing.
You get zero latency when you're playing. You hit the thing and it happens when you expect it to happen. That was a big deal for me. Like it's just really a poor experience for me trying to like play drums. And even if you have say 20 or 30 milliseconds lag, like you can't keep time like that. So I spend a lot of time getting it so that there's no latency. And if there is some latency for some reason, instead of delaying the note, it crops off the front side of the note. So if it's a snare, you might get less of that snappy front sound and more of the tail. And in the rare times that happens, it still kind of helps you because you don't get the full intensity of the sound. So you still know, you kind of mentally know where it was meant to start, where that note was meant to start.
You mentioned the locomotion thing method that you've been working on. I think that was probably the latest experiment that I've seen from you. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Sure. So I have this force-directed graph VR project for visualizing networks of nodes and edges between them. Right now, I'm doing a contract work with that. I'm customizing it for a client to have a bunch of features, and one of them that they wanted was to be able to move around in the space. Up until now, it was just a room scale. You walk around it. But we wanted to use the Leapmotion hands to get around, so we got to figure out a way to do that. So what's happening here in this GIF is that it's using the EXA's slide locomotion. And the slide, so there's two parts. The one part is the Superman gesture with the Leapmotion hands. The other part is the slide locomotion that comes from EXA. The slide locomotion works. Slide locomotion works basically by you start somehow, whether it's a button or in this case the hand gesture. You trigger, and wherever you trigger to start this locomotion, that becomes your center point. As you move, so say you hold that button down, and as you move forward or backward, left to right, away from that center point, that defines your angle of or your direction of motion. And the further you move is controls the speed. So if I want to go
like
forward really fast,
right? Or
yeah,
jump,
yeah,
or
exactly.
Right,
so,
stick.
Yeah, so you start the motion, you push way forward, and you go fast, quickly, or you can kind of strafe left or right. And then also, while you're doing that, if you tilt your controller like a door handle left or right, that controls your rotation. So you can do that. More tilt is more rotational speed. So you can move and rotate at the same time, which is really great. Like when I'm working with EXA to make music videos, you can kind of smoothly pan around and kind of pretend like you're a drone, like you do, Oz, yes, with the drone camera. You can kind of do that, but with your body.
But that's genius.
You move yourself vertically. So you probably could make this work vertically, but right now it's just lateral movement, and then you kind of go up and down if you want. So that's the first part. The second part is the hands. The hand gesture is basically when the hands are both out in front of you and the palms are faced. Palms are pointing downward, and the thumbs the palms are close enough together, that triggers the center point of this locomotion. From there, you keep your hands together, you push in or pull back left or right to do the movement, and you bank your hands left or right like the wings of a plane to do the rotations. And so in the same way, you can move and rotate at the same time. You put your hands together, push them forward, and bank your hands to the right, and you'll kind of fly forward and bank right, turn right at the same time. And so in this GIF, you can see I started this Blue Node. I fly in through the graph. I kind of rotate around through the center green one. I think I buzz by, yeah, that little blue one, spin around it. The center point also works as the axis of rotation. So wherever the center point is, that's where you'll spin. It's not about your head. It's about the center of the locomotion. So I felt like this worked pretty well. Since this GIF, I added another thing where it puts a big ring around your hands as they get closer together so that you know, you get some kind of visual that tells you you're almost there, you're almost there. And then it closes in on a center dot. And once it does that, then you've triggered the locomotion. And if you break the gesture, like you tilt one hand way over, or you separate your hands too far, then that center ring kind of just flies out. So it kind of gives you a little cue that it's broken. You're not in the gesture anymore. You've ended the gesture. And if you want to start again, you got to bring your hands back together.
Yeah, but I mean, that's genius because it should, from my understanding, prevent any motion sickness because you're literally moving with your hands and you're kind of doing this flight movement with your hands. And that way your brain basically is getting tricked into that I'm moving around. So it's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah, and plus you have the peripheral constriction, the tunnel effect.
Yep. And control over this
laterally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you have control over the speed. So if you don't want to rotate as fast as possible, just don't bank your hands as much. So it's sort of like it's not like riding a roller coaster or something where it's on a track and it's going to move however it moves. You're in control of this. So
it's like diving.
If it's uncomfortable, just go slower.
Yeah. So we're running a little bit short on time. In terms of EXA, are there things that that you want to talk about here that perhaps are coming out, or what's around the corner that people should know a little bit about?
All right. Well, so recently, in the past few months, I've had three releases. One of them was EXA Remix, which is a tool that lets you export the band, the virtual band, out of EXA and into any Unity app. We've hung out a bunch in the museum of other realities more. I worked with Colin and Robin to get one of the performances that I made out of EXA and into the museum so that we can all watch it together, which is really great. Also, since then, we've got the new sequencer tool, which lets you, there's already something kind of like a sequencer. The sequencer is more powerful. You can schedule all the loops and when they start and when they stop, and you can build up, it's much easier to build up larger, more complicated songs like that. And you can nest things and reuse the loops more than once. And then the latest release was all about the sound samples. So EXA started with only sound fonts, which is a really powerful way to get sounds with rules and dynamics built in. But it's far easier to just use a WAV file. So I kind of rebuilt some menus and restructured things so that now we can use sound fonts or just, I think it's WAV files or AIFF files or OGG files that you can just drop into the folder and EXA will find them. And so you can use like any of your favorite dubstep bass sounds or explosion sounds or whatever like vocal samples you want. So that's where EXA has been recently. I got so many things I want to do. It just takes a lot of time. Like having multiplayer built in some way would be awesome. I want to have a new menu system that kind of comes up on demand so you never have to move around to get things. Like a linear control box, like a cube where your position and rotation within there can map to other things like pitch or volume or distortion or any other effects, stuff like that. I want to have triggers where, I don't know if you remember the VR guitar project that I did. It was a precursor of EXA. But that at the left side of that there was a chord selector, and that's one of the few things that if from VR guitar that you still can't do in EXA is you can't have like a grid say of ringers and then easily switch them from like a C major scale to an E minor scale. There's not a way to do that without selecting them all and editing them. So what I want to do is have buttons where they're kind of programmed in the app to where when you hit the button, it sends an event to that grid and says, change these notes to be these new notes, and then you can switch back to C or switch to D or whatever you want. So that'll open up a bunch of new possibilities for, instead of building up a piano that's got a dozen different stacks of chords, you can just make one stack of chords, and then with your left hand, switch mm-hmm. which notes that chord is playing. So like one instrument shape that can switch up dynamically whenever you want it.
Right. Someone give money to this man so that he can hire a team of designers and engineers
yeah,
and
build more that's of a these future.
Things. So cool. Or
yeah,
acquire
that's a future
him
of music,
and give him
right?
more money.
Microsoft, no, Magic Leap, listen to us.
Yeah, no, seriously. Magic Leap, Meta, Microsoft, Google, and Apple should be knocking, hopefully.
And
Zach, how can people... And sure, if you want to throw them in there, Zach. How can people find you and find out more about all your work?
So I guess the best place is probably Twitter, and that's at Zach Kinstner, ZachKinstner. And then EXA is at EXA Music VR.
cool.
That's where I post most of the updates. I've got videos that I always post to my Aesthetic Interactive page on YouTube. And all the EXA updates and discussion boards and everything is all on Steam.
Awesome. You have Amazing. Awesome. You have great update videos that you put on your YouTube channel. Big fan of those. So he's probably, yeah, Thanks. You've been like one of the most consistent updating your app developers. So 100% people should download EXA and try it out.
Yeah, let's get more than like 200 views on the next one.
Yeah, we need to maybe change our title music or rebuild our title music in your app, right?
That would be super
sweet. That would be awesome.
Thank you all for listening again. If you want to find us at Twitter, we are at ResearchVRCast. Find us on Patreon as well if you want to help support this podcast for us to keep the lights on and to keep this going.
It's free since 2 years.
It is, that's right. And what else? And thank you all for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.